I love it. When things go like this, when one aspect of our lives comes into and feeds another, and things feel, even fleetingly, like they might make some sense. I wonder if any of you have had that experience, that. I imagine we so easily sense the opposite when things are clashing, when time and priorities, when the absence of light and our chasing after it burns a part of ourselves like the fox or the possum. Some things came into interesting symmetry for me this week. Aside from attending to various legal concerns, none of which I take lightly, by the way, I have been keeping an eye and ear open for what makes sense to share this week. The topic we've got going for the month of October just happens to have been the topic of the lead article in the New York Times Magazine last week. I don't know whether any of you saw it, and it gave me pause to celebrate this. What we're looking at this month, our theme, if you will, is time and location, the intersection of where we find ourselves in our moments on this earth, both geographically and historically. We can all notice aspects of our lives that, but for the time we are living in or the location, things might be different for us. So 2 weeks ago, Gordon Gibson helped us see what Selma was and how Selma continues. And Reverend Sarah Napoline last week considered our tradition in this current time, in this 21st century. And to my delight, I discovered this resource, at least of partially what I want to speak with you about this week. On October 11th, the New York Times published the culture issue for the magazine. And Wesley Morris, who was the writer, begins the feature article called "The Self in the Age of Anything Goes" by writing about the movie The Intern. Has anybody seen it? Oh, a couple people have seen it. I haven't even seen it yet. But in the movie, Robert De Niro plays a retired professional who goes back to work as an intern for a younger woman who's played by Anne Hathaway. She's a young executive. Morris describes the intern as both a complaint against the present and a pining for the past, but observes an acceptance that, well, we are where we are. And he opens the next paragraph. Where are we? Where are we? That is a great question. Time and location. Where are we? Now, this could be considered a reflection on here and now relative to having lived in a different century, perhaps, how each of our lives might have been challenged very differently, or a reflection on where we are individually and culturally in the 21st century as opposed to just 10 or 20 years ago. How has this very time and place located what serves us or challenges us? And might there be something consistent, irrespective of where we find ourselves? Morris suggests that right now we are in the midst of a great cultural identity migration. Gender roles are merging, races are being shed, he says. In the last 6 years or so, but especially in 2015, we've been made to see how trans and bi and polyambi-omni we are. He gives copious numbers of examples for how rapidly things are morphing in our cultural self-perceptions, some of which we'll look at a little bit next week, actually. He touches on books and movies and music, all kinds of social indicators. But he ends by suggesting that we are rapidly moving away from vertical self-perceptions or definitions, the traditional dividing blocks that informed our identities like age or ethnicity or religious affiliation, to more horizontal perception, more open and fluid and malleable identities. We're daring to erase the segregating boundaries, to obliterate oppressive institutions, to get over ourselves. He ends with this quip: the transition should make us stronger if it doesn't kill us first. It's challenging, this changing. But we are where we are, and so where are we? The question that popped up for me, as I mentioned earlier, and even before seeing last week's magazine, was whether everything in life is time and space dependent, particularly in the arena of the spirit. Aren't some things, for lack of a better word, universal? Across time, aren't some things timeless? Well, if anything was or has been, I would have thought that the golden rule was pretty timeless, right? The idea that we treat each other as we would be treated is consistent across religious spectrums and has been a cultural staple for, I don't know, 5,000 years or so. I have yet to identify a tradition that does not recognize some form of this sentiment as foundational to human relations, that we treat each other as we would be treated. So last week, in a conversation with Melissa, our religious educator, who's just a year or two younger than I am, I heard about the platinum rule. Golden rule, platinum rule. Not knowing about it made me feel very out of the loop. Now, anyone who has shopped for, let's say, a ring, for example, would know that metals have various strengths. Silver is somewhat more pliable than gold, and platinum, of course, is way out here on the strongest end, and three times as much per ounce in its market value. Whoever came up with the name for the platinum rule knew this pecking order, no doubt. So the golden rule says, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. The platinum rule says, do unto others as they would have done unto them. It mentions the golden rule in one of the articles I read as the predecessor to this contemporary rule. I thought, golden rule is a predecessor? Where have I been? Aside from the version of the rule that was on the TV sitcom How I Met Your Mother, which some of you may have seen as far back as like 2008, it's a total variation on the one we're talking about here. The platinum rule seems fairly consistently applied to business environments, particularly service work. So I gather it was coined in the 70s by Milton Bennett, who was a cross-cultural research, and recommended it as a way of calling attention to varying cultural expressions. There was a book published about it in 1998 that has to do with being successful by anticipating what others expect. And I actually found an article about the double platinum rule, which says we should treat each other, or treat others, the way they don't even know they want to be treated. Good, right? 21st century, here and now. But the idea of the basic platinum rule must have spread beyond business environments, because Melissa said it was all over the New York school system when she was teaching there 3 years ago. And it was mentioned last week by one of our children as something they had learned in class. So an example to clarify its use for those of us to whom it's new in a social situation might be the following. I like having doors held open for me, but Jane prefers to open her own doors. Instead of insisting that she shut up and let me open her doors, I abide by the platinum rule, and I let her open her own doors when she wants to. I'm not sure how you're supposed to know, but somehow. Regardless of whether we agree that the platinum rule has more value in social interactions than our age-old golden rule, it does indicate yet another shift, another alteration in our understanding of how we are in relationship in our lives, particularly in a world that is increasingly interdependent across cultures and economies. Remember Wesley Morris? The transition should make us stronger if it doesn't kill us first. Curiously, Morris's reference to horizontal versus vertical, the idea that our identities are becoming more fluid, more malleable, has found resonance in a new book by speaker and columnist Diana Butler Bass. The book is called Grounded. Instead of referencing cultural identity, her writing is about religious identity, specifically how we understand ideas about the divine, about God, if you will. She notes that in the 21st century, top-down institutions and philosophies are weakening, which includes top-down religions. She suggests there is a shift in the here and now from a three-tiered vertical construct of theology to a theologically flattened world. Instead of God being somewhere up high, a celestial king, untouchable and separate, she notices now a cultural language of divine nearness that has come to surround us. It is an alternative theology set, she says, that of connection and intimacy. It is a path that unfolds the mundane and the sacred. This world, she suggests, not heaven, is the sacred stage of our lives. In my mind, as I was reading this, I kept seeing the variety of athletes who pump their chests and point to the sky. I wondered what it would look like if they pumped their chests and pointed everywhere around them. It might be very confusing. You know, they get a touchdown, they're all like... be different. I admit I feel an affinity for Butler Bass's thinking, if not all the details of her theology. My soul has a mile-wide mystical streak, she writes, and that feels familiar to me. The mystic, like Hafiz from our reading earlier this morning, dwells in the mysterious, the unknown and unknowable, perhaps, and looks for that which is worthy of celebration. My colleague, Peter Richardson, posted an email recently. If God is further defined, mystery ceases to be mystery any longer. This cultural movement, this thing that Butler Bass calls a spiritual revolution of our very time and place, is so encouraging to me. Whereas the shift in emphasis from golden rule to platinum rule left me a little uneasy. This evolution of flattening, of bringing what has been considered distant and unattainable and separate from us, bringing it into and among our lives, tangible and relational, feels worthy of our attention. The new vision, she suggests, knits spirituality and science and social justice into an earthy fabric of meaning and faith. It confirms that everything we do is radically interdependent with our spiritual lives. We needn't ever be separated from that which is most intimate and loving in ourselves and in others. We have not come into this exquisite world to hold ourselves hostage from love. Those words offered to us by Hafiz were written sometime in the 14th century. Wouldn't it be amazing if sometime in the near future, humans saw in all things something divine, in the earth, the air, the water, in each other, in all creatures? We would be swimming in a celebration of life. The gift of mystery might be so pervasive, we would not feel the need to name it or divide ourselves by it. Here's one for you. There are these two young fish swimming along, and they happen to meet an older fish, perhaps an older fish who remembers a time and location where understanding was not so replete. The older fish nods at them and says, "Morning, boys, how's the water?" And the two young fish swim on for a bit, and then eventually one of them looks over at the other and goes, "What the hell is water?" We would be swimming in a celebration of life. Our tradition, this experiment we are engaged in together, at its core is experiential, not ideological. And that is the world we may be moving towards. The one that asks not who is love or what is love, not who is God or what is God, not who is joy or what is joy, but where and how is love? Where and how is joy? We must each ask ourselves, given this time and place we live in, where are we? In the midst of keeping up in a world with an ever-growing population and a challenge of resources, of technology that we can hardly manage before something new arrives, somehow it does not often feel like the time in history, nor the location, for a sentiment as beautiful as surrendering ever more deeply to freedom and joy. But that is our task. Because it's gone in an instant, this life. And we only get one shot at it. Regardless of what issues or challenges we are struggling with at any given point in time, and there are often many, whether they would be otherwise had we found ourselves in a different time or place, we dare not look back and wonder, when did I celebrate? It is timeless to remember that we dare not hold ourselves hostage from love. We have a timeless opportunity to surrender to beauty, to the light that is present to all, to locate our divine courage in each and every moment and space, to be connected to the nameless mystery that is why we're here in the first place. These days, in the 21st century, if we want emphasis in our communication, at least written, we often see things in all caps, with periods in between. Imagine this, things like best dot time dot ever dot. In this moment, in this space, whenever and wherever you find yourself, that is our timeless reminder. Let it shine. So may it be.